Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, in the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the Treaties of Peace and Friendship, first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Erica Butler. It's Thursday, July 15th. Coming up on today's show, Transport Action Atlantic President Ted Bartlett thinks federal investment is needed to properly revive train travel in Atlantic Canada, and he's got some ideas about the Sackville train station, too. Later in the show, we talk with Bartlett about Via Rail's recent announcement that the Ocean will resume service in August, if only for one round trip per week. Also, the Vitalite Clinic at the Tantramar Civic Center turned to a walk-in clinic at the last minute yesterday. There's been more vandalism of rainbow crosswalks in Sackville, and a Sackville doctor is closing his practice in town. But first, the COVID-19 update. New Brunswick marked its ninth straight day with no new COVID-19 cases to report on Wednesday. The number of active cases in the province is down to two, with both of those cases located in Zone 1. Chief Medical Officer of Health Jennifer Russell happily shared the news at a COVID briefing on Wednesday.
No New Brunswickers are currently in the hospital due to the virus, and this is the first time since mid-January that this has been the case. As a province, we are making incredible progress, and I'm very encouraged by the number of people who have chosen to be vaccinated. Currently, 53.5% of eligible New Brunswickers are fully vaccinated, and 79.9% have received their first dose of the vaccine. We are well on our way toward the green level.
The green level of recovery involves the complete lifting of all public health restrictions, which the province has promised once 75% of all eligible people have received two doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. Roughly 150,000 more people need to receive a second dose to hit that mark. The province is nearing another milestone in first dose coverage, inching very close to 80% of eligible people vaccinated with at least one dose on Wednesday. Just another 565 first doses will put the province at 80% of those 12 and older having had at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. On Wednesday, the Vitalite Health Network hosted a mass vaccination clinic at the Tantramar Civic Center, one of several clinics available in the Tantramar area over the coming days. The Vitalite Clinic was advertised as a pre-booked clinic, but at about 11:30 Wednesday morning, the Health Network tweeted out to announce that walk-in appointments would be accepted for first doses only for the Moderna vaccine. Then at 3:30 p.m., Vitalite tweeted out again, opening up walk-in appointments to anyone wanting a first or second dose of vaccine. CHMA has reached out to the province for information on how many people were vaccinated at the clinic on Wednesday. The Dorchester Veterans Community Hall is hosting a walk-in Moderna vaccine clinic today between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Pre-booking is not necessary. Anyone interested can show up with their Medicare card, a signed consent form, and an immunization record if it's their second shot. On Saturday, the Corner Drugstore is offering a walk-in clinic for the Pfizer vaccine. The pharmacy has about 60 doses of Pfizer, which is approved for anyone 12 and older. One of the rainbow crosswalks painted by Sackville Public Works in recognition of Pride Month has been vandalized for a second time. The rainbow stripes extend across Main Street near the Mann Allison Avard Dixon building. The paint has been defaced by unknown drivers, leaving black skidded tire marks across the colorful paint. This is the second time the same crosswalk has been defaced this season, and comes after a public works crew had repainted and restored the crosswalk markings. In June, Middle Sackville resident Christian Corbett started an online group to share information and educate around LGBTQ+ issues in Sackville. The group is called Sackville LGBTQ+ Safe Community and can be found on Facebook. A local Sackville doctor is closing his practice in Sackville in just over a month. Dr. Corey Long will close up shop as of August 22, 2021, according to a Facebook post by Jana Long. Long says Horizon Health is currently looking for a replacement, but advises that Dr. Long's patients call 811 and put their names on the provincial patient registration list in case one is not found. Via Rail will resume limited service on its Halifax to Montreal route, the Ocean, starting on August 11th. But with only one round trip per week scheduled, the route will be a shadow of its former self. Transport Action Atlantic is a public transport and passenger rail advocacy group who have long been pushing for renewed investment in passenger rail in the Maritimes. I called up Ted Bartlett, president of Transport Action Atlantic, to get his reaction to VIA's reopening plan for the Ocean. Ted, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Erica.
What was your reaction to the news that the Ocean will be back this August?
Well, of course, it's an encouraging sign. The train hasn't operated since March 13th, 2020, so it's been about 16 months since there was last a passenger train operating in Atlantic Canada. It's going to be a long road back for many reasons. It's starting off with a lot of COVID restrictions still on the table, including very reduced amenities on board. You know, they're first-class passengers, instead of eating in the dining car, will be handed in a box lunch in their sleeping compartments, and they're really not allowed to leave their sleeper compartments. There's no socializing, no moving around, which is all part of the passenger rail experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I saw that you would have to remain in your seat, I thought, well, that's part of the problem there.
Yeah, that's for economy class passengers.
And yes.
Sleeper class at least will be able to remove their masks once they're inside their enclosed accommodation.
Right.
But for coach passengers, from the time they enter the railway station until the time they leave the station at destination, masks must be worn constantly. And many people do find them uncomfortable, but it's a necessary evil, you know. But it doesn't make traveling any more of an enjoyable experience, that's for sure. And the longer you're required to wear it, the more tedious it becomes.
There's also, you know, the factor of that this will only be running one round trip per week in the beginning. And
I don't think they are anticipating a big demand at the outset, but mm-hmm. at least it's a start. And they've got a lot of new employees that they have to train too, because they lost a lot of them during the pandemic. There was, as I understand it, quite a few who were eligible retired and won't be coming back, and then many more found other jobs. So we're starting. It's almost like starting from scratch in a way, but they're starting with one hand tied behind their back, because when full onboard service is restored, it won't be the full onboard experience that we had pre-pandemic, because what has changed is the inability now to turn the train in Halifax, and it will have to run backwards to Montreal, which means that many coach passengers will be riding backwards. It also means that the iconic observation car that used to be on the end of the Ocean will be no more, because it is not possible to run it backwards. It's designed to run in one direction only. And as far as aesthetics is concerned, it won't present the appearance of a first-class passenger train that it once did, because you'll have baggage cars on each end instead of that iconic dome that was a feature of the Ocean for the last 30 years. At the end, you'll just have another baggage car. Mm-hmm. Economy class passengers are going to be separated too. Some of them will be at one end of the train on the other side of the sleeping cars, and others will be at the front end of the train. Mm-hmm. Depending on whether they're riding in Renaissance or stainless steel cars. VIA calls it a hybrid. I kind of tend to call it a cobbled-up solution, a horse designed by a committee.
Right.
And that's a camel, right?
So this is the solution to the issue of not being able to turn around in Halifax, which is something that, I mean, you've told us about this before. This, there is
Crown land being leased by the port in Halifax, and they are unable to negotiate, I guess, the use of where the ocean used to turn around. Is that the idea?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's correct, and there were some possible solutions, but they're all had a price tag to them, and VIA didn't have the money to implement them. Some of them had operational issues that CN wouldn't go along with as well. So the solution, of course, and this the ultimate solution, and this will have to be addressed at some point, is that all the rolling stock they're using, both the coaches and the sleepers, the stainless steel cars, and the newer British-built troublesome Renaissance cars, are at the end of their working life. And VIA acknowledges this in its corporate report to Parliament. Something needs to be done. VIA can't initiate something on its own. The government has to authorize expenditures, and the political will just doesn't seem to be there. There's been a great traveling roadshow last week where they announced massive expenditures, I think in the order of $7 billion for what is effectively a new passenger right-of-way in the Quebec City-Windsor corridor. But there's nothing east of Quebec City. And we like to keep reminding both VIA management, but more importantly, the Government of Canada, that Canada does not end at Quebec City. And we have a right to expect a reasonable amount of passenger rail service. And the bare minimum should be a daily train operating on a decent schedule with modern equipment between Halifax and Montreal. There's no sign that the government is considering this, even though some of their own MPs are quietly advocating for it. But you know, how outspoken they can be remains to be seen, because they're somewhat muzzled by party discipline. And there's no apparent political will at the cabinet level to do anything about the rail passenger needs of Atlantic Canada. They say, oh, well, we're providing a service coast to coast, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what kind of service? It's not acceptable, doesn't meet the needs, and it's only going to get worse as the equipment gets more and more burdened by its age. It's all well past its best before date, and it's something that they need to address, and quite frankly, they haven't.
Does this feel like a missed opportunity, this 16-month hiatus, and then to come back with essentially worse off than when we ended service in March?
Yes, that's another difficulty with rebuilding the service, in that it is inevitably a less attractive product. But if they designed new passenger cars, and they don't have to design them from scratch because they're available, they're being produced in the U.S. right now for Amtrak. It's passenger rolling stock that's designed for North American conditions. And obviously, it would take a while to get it delivered and ordered and, you know, put out a request for proposals. But you don't need to start from scratch with designing and building new equipment. It is available. It just has to be built. And they could design the interiors of that so that it deals with the problem of not being able to turn the train. And with a little bit of track work in Halifax, they actually could reverse the train so that the sleeping cars are always at the tail end. Just move the cars around without turning them. That's something that's commonly done in the railway business worldwide. So how much would all this cost? We don't have the resources to accurately cost it out, but based on what Amtrak has paid for its new equipment acquisitions recently, what VIA itself is paying for modern, more environmentally friendly diesel locomotives, and some guesses, educated guesses that have been given about what's necessary to rehabilitate the track in northern New Brunswick, We figure the total price tag would be in the vicinity of $300 million. And that's a far cry from the $7 billion that they're talking about for the corridor. And to put it in perspective, the public investment required here would be about the same as what it would cost to build 30 kilometers of divided highway. It's not a big ticket item. But again, the political will has to be there to do it.
The current state of passenger rail transportation, and I would say, like, it does sort of seem like the ocean is being treated now for the last while as a possible tourist line, like a tourist route, but really it doesn't have a lot of practical transportation function beyond that at the moment.
That's true with the tri-weekly schedule. In order for it to really meet the needs of the traveling public in Atlantic Canada, it needs to be a daily service. But that's one thing. But when you don't have perhaps one of the most significant attractions for the tourist trade, the people who pay the highest fares, the observation car with the dome at the end, when that's gone, it becomes a much less attractive tourism product as well. So the need is there for new rolling stock that will reduce their operating costs, obviously, because it will require less maintenance. But it will also work around the problem of being unable to turn the train at Halifax.
You've just sort of talked about what size of investment we're talking about here. I think that there's a lot of people who think that train travel is sort of no longer the efficient way to go. But from Transport Action Atlantic's perspective, that's definitely, I would say, not the case. We're still facing a climate crisis right now. Why do you think, what is the most potent argument in favor of making that investment so that we can actually ramp up and bring back rail as a viable regional transportation offering?
Well, you just put your finger right on it. It's climate friendly, and we're seeing it as close as the U.S., which hasn't exactly been a world leader in investment in passenger rail. But the Biden administration is going full ahead on that, and funding is being made available. Amtrak is in expansion mode. We don't see any sign that VIA is in any kind of expansion mode outside the corridor. Granted, they have to start somewhere, and I guess the place that generates the vast majority of their passenger revenues is a good place to start. But if Canada has to present to all its citizens the option of an environmentally friendly mode of transportation, they need to be investing in passenger rail outside the corridor, and it doesn't have to be the really expensive stuff that is only justified in high population corridors. Here in Atlantic Canada, a more modest investment would satisfy the need, as long as the track is fixed, the equipment is new and reliable, and the schedule is frequent enough that it meets the public's need.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, I know we have awfully slow tracks in going through New Brunswick up north, and has there been any improvement or change over the course of the pandemic to those tracks?
No, I would suspect they've probably gotten worse, but because there hasn't been a whole lot of maintenance, needless to say, because they're very little used for various reasons. CN doesn't use them a lot for freight, so and their freight trains move at a very slow speed anyway, so. There's no incentive to them to upgrade it. I think realistically, it has to be a public investment, and you just don't throw money at CN either, because remember, they are an investor-owned company. They're all about shareholder value. So there have been some bitter lessons in the past where close to $500 million was invested in the existing Toronto-Montreal corridor, supposedly to allow faster and more frequent trains. CN swallowed that $500 million, and there's been very little to show for it. So if you're cooking a deal with an investor-owned railroad, and I wouldn't imagine the Canadian Pacific would be any different, you've got to make sure that the interests of the taxpayers who are paying the bill is protected.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've mentioned this before. Here in Sackville, we have a stop, but not a station, although we still have a station building standing there. And a few people did take note that on VIA's new graphics that they released for the ocean, Sackville wasn't listed. Now we're crammed in there, very close to Amherst. Do you think that the stop in Sackville will continue to be an option?
I suspect it will, but I don't think there's going to be any place for the people waiting for the train to get in out of the weather, or to use the washroom, or to have a waiting area if the train is delayed, which it often is. I don't think that's going to happen unless the community buys into it. This is what's happened in Amherst. You know, the town took over the station. They found someone to lease it to. I think it's a pizza restaurant. But the last time I looked in the windows there, and it was just pre-pandemic, and it hadn't yet opened. But the waiting room had been all restored. There appeared to be functioning washrooms and everything in there. So the town has to become involved. And I realize this is a high-maintenance building in Sackville. It's a stone heritage structure, and VIA is prohibited from demolishing it because it's a designated heritage building. But the same situation applied in Amherst, and a solution was somehow found. So, we have a new mayor and council in Sackville now, so hopefully some new initiatives can be explored, but it's unrealistic to expect VIA to staff stations everywhere they stop. There has to be a partnership between VIA and the community. It's particularly high cost operation for VIA, and that's why they discontinued it. But there are examples, and Amherst is a recent one. We haven't actually seen it in practice, but there's one in New Brunswick. At Rogersville, which has been in place for years, where the village owns the station, and they maintain it. They ensure that the waiting room and washrooms are open at train time, and they use the rest of the building for their own purposes. It's a visitor information center in the summer, and they've actually leased out some office space. I think the last time I was there, it was used by a consulting engineer as his office.
All right. Well, I mean, we'll have to... We'll see if this idea takes flight in Sackville. As you say, we have a new mayor and council, so you never know.
Yes, we're looking forward to having some dialogue with the new mayor and council once things settle down post-COVID, and perhaps we can encourage a solution.
All right.
And it's happened elsewhere in Canada, and it's a very widespread solution in the U.S., where Amtrak has literally hundreds and hundreds of stations that they do not staff but are maintained by the community.
Very interesting. Well, we thank you again for taking the time to speak with us, Ted. It's always a pleasure, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Erica.
That was Ted Bartlett, president of Transport Action Atlantic. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Thursday, July 15th. As always, for story ideas, tips, or feedback, contact us at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.